Hello, and welcome to another episode of MK Crypto Diaries. I am your host, Dr. Justine Cher Herrera, and we are recording this episode today, the 4th of September, 2023. Today, we will be talking about crypto regulatory insights in the Israeli market. Israel, especially Tel Aviv, is known to be one of the most buzzing places in the world for partying, tech, and high-tech. Many major tech founders and companies originated in Israel. Israel has also become a major hub for crypto startups. Now, although many startups in the cryptocurrency industry in Israel end up going to market in Europe, they start by building their product in Israel. Is there a legal framework for crypto and digital assets in Israel? If so, what does it look like? What about tax? How is crypto treated for tax purposes? What does the banking scene look like for crypto users in Israel? Are there any licensed providers offering crypto services in the country? Keep listening to get the full scoop on what's going on in the crypto world in the Israeli market. Joining us to discuss today is Zvi Gabay. Zvi boasts over 20 years of experience in both Israel and New York in the fields of financial regulation and securities enforcement. Zvi used to be the head of enforcement and a member of management at the Israel Securities Authority and is now the head of the capital markets department at Barnea Jafar Lande, one of Israel's leading law firms. Zvi, thank you very much for joining us today. Let's dive right in. So Zvi, from my latest trip to Tel Aviv last March, where MK FinTech went on a crypto law firm roadshow, I realized that Tel Aviv is not only a party central, but also a tech and high-tech central. It is home to one of the highest amount of tech startups and founders in the world. To name just a few related to the crypto industry, we have Fireblocks and eToro. Why is this? What has seeded this remarkable tech ecosystem? Are there any special government initiatives or monetary incentives for startups? Or is it perhaps due to some cultural specific influences? Over to you.
An interesting, thank you. And thank you for having me. It's an interesting question. And I think the answer is a bit of both. We are and have been for many, many years, and I hope we continue to be the startup nation. There's a very deep entrepreneurial culture in Israel. People come out of college and they could interview to a junior position in a company or decide to start a company. And it's amazing how these are two alternatives that, you know, you can turn right or you can turn left. Mm-hmm. And the culture and the ecosystem support that. You have lawyers that understand that working with these types of startups, really early age startups, you can't start charging immediately. And you have accountants that know that. And you have business consultants that understand that. And you have various service providers. It could be programmers, and it could be, I mean, from the entire gamut to assist. I think that what helps is also government incentives. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that the chief scientist is in Israel is particularly strong on investing and supporting crypto blockchain, the crypto blockchain industry, but it looks at innovation. Mm-hmm. And if there is innovation, then they certainly may provide that. But again, when that's part of the culture, it just makes starting a company that much easier. And I think the third thing that probably needs to be mentioned is the Israeli army, where there's mandatory service. And definitely if you're in a tech oriented unit, you know, so the cyber, that's definitely, but what's crypto, right? I mean, it's so good programmers that get cryptology and can handle these things and can handle it under pressure and quickly, I think that's probably a mixture of things. And I'll just end with a small anecdote. My wife founded a company a number of years ago, and one of her American investors told her, he said, this is amazing. By the time that we in the United States would have been in our, you know, second round of PowerPoint presentation, you already raised $1 million. We do things in Israel quickly, sometimes too quickly, sometimes it comes at a price, but there's also merit in doing things quickly. And I think that's part of who we are.
Yes, no, I completely agree. I mean, if anyone wants to know the definition of high tech or cyber, they just land in Tel Aviv. It's completely ubiquitous. And as you're saying, there are some of the best and brightest minds in cyber and security. So this also helps with raising capital. If you're a founder from Israel, you just have a sort of bonus point straight away. Okay, great. Now, Zvi, you have a truly impressive background with over 20 years of experience in financial regulation and securities. Can you please give us an overview of what the regulatory landscape in Israel for crypto looks like today, who the main regulatory bodies are, and also perhaps how cryptocurrencies and digital assets are classified in Israel?
Okay, so that's a bundle of questions.
A loaded
there.
Question, yes.
yeah, but fairly easy to answer. So I'll take a step back and I'll say that in Israel, we have three major financial regulators. Okay, there are countries that have one, there are countries that have several. In Israel, we have three. We have the Israel Securities Authority. I was part of that authority that manages basically capital markets, primary market and then secondary market, and the supporting system. So brokers, investment advisors, portfolio managers, fund managers. We have the bank supervisors. So that's the regulator that regulates the banking system. And we have the Capital Market Insurance and Savings Authority. Now that's the youngest authority. It was only founded approximately 5 years ago. And it supervises over the insurance, pension industry, and off-banking credit market.
Okay.
And as part of that, they actually took the lead or received a leading role by the Israeli legislature to regulate services provided in what we call financial assets, okay, where that definition includes within it also crypto and digital tokens. And once you have that, then that really provided, that was the source of authority for that regulator to grant licenses. Mm-hmm. And now we have that regulator that regulate licenses for services in, among other things, crypto assets. However, that's not the only regulator that you need to take into account. Because, for example, if you are issuing a token, mm-hmm, and that token rises to the level, the definition of a security, then you fall under the auspice and authority of the Israel Securities Authority. Okay. And you need to interact with the Israel Securities Authority. If you create a trading system that allows for buy orders and sell orders to automatically meet, mm-hmm, and execute, and those tokens happen to be securities, mm-hmm, then again, you need a special license from the Israel, okay, Securities Authority. That's that. And in addition, we have the bank supervisor that obviously also had its own input to weigh in into the industry. So I think the rough and dirty answer to your question is it really depends on what you want to do. You may have to deal with three financial regulators. You may have to deal with one financial regulator, but you need to be aware of this somewhat not necessarily straightforward regulatory regime. Now, you asked how crypto assets are classified in Israel. And here, I'll say this. We have the Israel Securities Authority that is fairly aggressive, and I would say in certain aspects following suit the SEC in the United States, basically very quick to classify tokens as securities. That's that. We have the Israeli Tax Authority that was the first authority, the first governmental agency that issued a formal regulatory guidance on crypto. Basically, what they said was tokens, Bitcoin, those are classified as assets, and we tax you. It's basically capital gains, because they wanted to make sure that they get money, right? That they get, that the country gets paid. So yeah, so they were the first. So the question of how an asset is classified depends a lot on the entity making that classification and their agenda.
That do you have a sort of generic statement, just like the SEC have the Howey test, which sort of is quite open to interpretation in terms of how the authority decides to apply a token as a security or not? Because you mentioned the SEC as a comparison, so perhaps we can keep it keep the same authority as a comparison for definition's sake.
Right. So as I said, I think in past years, the Israel Securities Authority was very aggressive in calling tokens securities, and acting upon that, similarly to the SEC. What's happening now is a few things. The market is evolving, technology is evolving, and if you ask me, MiCA is a super important element that we need to throw into the mix, because the Europeans took their time and came out with a holistic regulatory framework. And I think that Israel, that caused Israel in certain aspects to stop following the United States and saying, wait a minute, we need to rethink what we're doing. We can see this in the bills that are being proposed. They're actually moving from being very aggressive, leaning towards the United States definition, or the SEC's definition, to be more accurate, and recognizing the fact that, and I think this is a very important recognition and declaration, that not every token is a security. But I can say that, for example, the latest bill introduces the term digital investment asset, and the digital investment asset includes within it a component that I felt was heavily inspired by the Howey test, basically saying you're a digital investment asset. Right. So it's an investment contract, right? Okay. Or an investment asset, regardless if there's another purpose to the token. So if, for example, I issue utility tokens, and they are real utility tokens, you need them in order to gain services on my platform. And it's not only a gimmick, but there's real tokenomics involved, because there's a lot of just gimmicks where you don't understand why there's a token. They just do it because it's cool. So let's talk about a real use case. But if that real use case, I'm also sort of pushing it as a great investment, and you want to invest in this because later on down the road, this is going to be worth a lot of money, then you will fall under the Israeli proposed legislation under that definition of digital investment asset, which would probably put you in not necessarily where you want to be.
So if there's financial gain to be made, so it could be a utility, but plus financial gain, then it could possibly fall under securities regulations.
All right. That's right.
So they focus on that aspect. And you mentioned the bill. I was going to mention this question a bit later on, but perhaps since it came up, we could speak a bit about the recent bill. So it has recently been reported that the Israel Securities Authority has released a draft proposal in order to define the legal status of cryptocurrencies in Israel. These amendments to Israeli securities law would expand crypto supervision and would make sure that crypto assets are covered by the regulatory framework and placed under the oversight of the Israel Securities Authorities. So could you please perhaps shed some further light on the substance on these new proposals, and also what impact these are going to have on the sector, and also if finally these proposals are likely to be adopted and implemented in the country?
Okay. So I'll start from the end.
Okay.
Will the legislation have impact on the industry in Israel? Absolutely. And the reason I say absolutely is because the crypto industry desperately needs regulation in order to flourish. It reached the point where we all understand the risks associated with it. We understand the benefits. And we also understand how difficult it is to move from one parallel, right? The metaverse, the world of crypto, and turn it into money I could use to buy food and pay salaries and pay rent. And in order for the crypto industry to fulfill what it can fulfill, and I think what it's destined to fulfill, we need regulation, because regulation is the bridge. Regulation will enable that movement from the metaverse to the real world and vice versa. So absolutely, when there's regulation, that's a huge impact on the industry. Is it likely to become actual mandatory laws? I think so. The reason I think this is mainly because I read the governmental decision that accompanied this. Basically, what the Israel Securities Authority is doing here is part of its assignments. It was assigned, the Israel Securities Authority and the other regulators were assigned, instructed by the government within X amount of time. I don't remember what it is, but it's a reasonable period of time to put together legislation and to take it forward, because the government understands that the world is moving forward. And again, I'm going back to Mika. If there's one thing that I need to point at that caused our government to understand that the train is on its move, it left the station, it's Mika, right? Because the train left the station. And if you want to be, you have to be part of it, definitely in Israel. So that's the end. But let me go back. So what the law does there is that bill does a number of things, and it needs to be complemented by legislation, by additional legislation to be proposed by the other financial regulators. They're working on it. So at the end, we'll have hopefully a holistic regulatory regime that will provide certainty to the industry, which is, again, it's the industry needs it, right? That it's like air. So first of all, definitions, you need to define. So defining what I mentioned before, a digital asset, a digital investment asset, excluding from that definition of a digital investment asset, stable coins, CBDC, right? central bank digital currency, because we know that's coming, NFTs, and there is inserted there authority for the Minister of Finance to add additional products as they are invented, right?
Yes.
NFTs were something that no one knew about. Then suddenly, wham, the whole world talked about. Now no one's talking about it again, but it will eventually come back because it has real value, right? So definitions is important. Another thing is what the law basically says is it's technology agnostic, okay? It's not, we're not gonna legislate or create a regulatory regime for crypto. What we're gonna do is we're gonna take our regulatory regime and we're gonna do the necessary adaptations so that they also apply to crypto. For example, if you come to me seeking advice on whether or not it's, you know, you should invest in Bitcoin, invest in Ether, invest in some other token, it's unclear whether or not I can provide you with this service without a license from the Israel Securities Authority, right? If you're asking me about investments in real estate, I don't need a license from the Israel Securities Authority. If you're asking me about investing in old car, antique cars, I don't need a license from the financial regulator. But if you're asking me about bonds, about funds, about financial products, I need a license. So what's Bitcoin? So now what the law is doing is it's bridging the gap. And it's basically saying these tokens, these crypto are part of the financial industry, the financial ecosystem. Mm-hmm. So it's not like an apartment. Mm-hmm. It's more like investing in securities and financial products. So defining that, talking about and providing for the legal and regulatory infrastructure for licenses for trading platforms, for clearing platforms. That's new. Talking about DAOs, what are they? Defining them. Now, Israel is very careful. It's not leading the world here. It's following suit. Also in Europe, they're still talking about DAO, definitely in other places, but already the ability to say, look, certain things, you can call them DAO, but we identify an issuer here. This is a security. So that already the law is beginning to touch upon. Again, all these things help to provide regulatory certainty. And finally, very important, obviously, is ensuring that the crypto industry and ecosystem and service providers are all need to comply with anti-money laundering requirements, right? I think that's a very, very important component. When we talked about the bridge between the metaverse and the real world, that's super important because you can't go to a bank if you don't have real controls and you can talk intelligently about your AML policies. So that's some of what the bill did. I will say just before I finish here, I want to compliment the Israel Securities Authority for listening to the market. The first draft, as I said, was very aggressive. It felt like this is the SEC, you know, a translation in Hebrew to the way the SEC views the crypto industry. And there is a real difference. And that would have been, in my mind, a market breaker. And now the bill that we have is a lot more a market maker as opposed to a market breaker. And I think that's a good thing. And when regulators listen to the market, that's always a good thing.
Oh, perfect. And it's very good that the authorities change their course, because obviously at the moment the US is not shining in the best of lights. So it's at least it changes direction to MiCA. And as you say, there are a lot of similarities. So when it comes to MiCA, what they did was implement and transpose a lot of the same MiFID investment service principles and just changing financial instruments for crypto assets. And then, of course, breaking down and classifying those crypto assets as your proposals seem to be doing too. And right. As you said, even if they are, you know, harsher, maybe not the best proposals, at least there'll be regulatory clarity and certainty, which is something that the market needs. So in terms of licensing, at the moment, there is a framework in place, so there are some regulations in terms of obtaining a license. However, it seems to have been very difficult, at least so far, to obtain a crypto-related license. Now, as I understand it, there are just a few operators licensed in the countries so far. So question to you is, which are the operators which are currently licensed to provide crypto-related services in the market in Israel and currently in existence? What are they licensed to provide? And also, what, in your opinion, have been the main difficulties or hurdles for obtaining such licenses so far? So, for example, case in point, Bits of Gold, which is one of the few main licensed operators, took around 5 years to obtain the license.
Right. So there I believe, either four or five licensed entities. They are primarily licensed, and what they do is wallet services and exchange, fiat to crypto, crypto to fiat, and transfers. That's what they provide. And it's true, it took way too long, many, many years. The reason is, I think there are a number of reasons. First of all, as I mentioned in the beginning, this is the youngest regulator. Okay, so this is a regulator that has been around for a relatively short period of time, understaffed. It takes time to build up supervisory abilities. It takes time to build, to put together your supervisory doctrine, the way you will do it. When right? So there's a license application. Okay, so the regulation will say what needs to be in that license application, but you need a regulator to figure out what they're going to look at. What's going to be the due diligence? When will they decide to grant a license? When will they decide not to grant a license? And these things take time. And I can tell you that I was, for example, part of the Israel Securities Authority. Now, that is a seasoned regulator, has been around since 1968, and it's very evident, right? When you file a license application, they know what they're doing. They have a well-established practice. So it's very clear what they do. But when the Israel Securities Authority, this very seasoned regulator, received the authority to supervise over trading platforms for CFDs. Okay. So this was new. The law came into effect, I don't remember when, and it took the Israel Securities Authority, I think at least three years, maybe four, to grant licenses. And at the end, they granted licenses, I think, to six entities, right? So to show you that even with a seasoned regulator, it takes time. It takes time for the regulators to learn the business, to understand the risk, because only when they really understand the risks, they can conduct real due diligence and ask real questions. Otherwise, they're giving out licenses and they don't know what they're doing. And giving out a license without knowing what you're doing is, you know, it's like James Bond, right? It's a license to kill. So they need to be very careful with that. So here we're talking about a young regulator, understaffed, that needs to figure out everything about it. Not only how to grant licenses crypto related, and the crypto industry is a complicated industry. right? There's technology there. There are real AML risks. These regulators need to understand what the technology does, what the challenges are, how the technology can be abused. And this takes time. So it took many years, but I think now, I can tell you now, when I represent clients in license applications, A, I can tell you that there are several entities in the works, right? So it's not, we didn't end with these four or five entities. More are to come.
Okay.
But more importantly, when you talk to the regulators, they understand the industry, they understand the risks, they know what to ask, which is a good thing, right? Because you don't want to be in the position where you're educating them, because then they're uncomfortable. When they're comfortable, when they know what they're talking about, they ask questions, you provide answers, and if you provide good answers, you get a license. So I you know, I can't tell you how long, you know, the new applications that we've recently filed will take, but they won't take 5 years. They're going to take much less.
Okay. And in terms of, firstly, thank you for that. And in terms of the transition, so at the moment, if you had to submit a crypto license application for an exchange, a custodian, whatever it is, at this very day, it will go in front of the third regulator you mentioned. So the securities, banking, and then capital markets, insurance, and other. So as it stands today, it will go in front of the third, which is the youngest from the three. However, there are these bills which have been presented and hopefully may become law. So obviously, it's only at that stage, once they become law, will the applications move to the securities authority for processing, and obviously under the new requirements, correct, in terms of how that will roll out?
Mm-hmm. Again, it depends on the service, right? So okay. If you are going to just be like an exchange or just be a wallet, then you stay with the capital market insurance and savings authority.
Okay.
If you are going to issue a token,
okay,
you will have to go through the Israel Securities Authority to make sure that you're doing this appropriately. I can tell you now, the Israel Securities Authority is also starting to govern the payment industry.
Okay.
That is one of the major applications of blockchain platforms. So that also may be something that will require a license from the Israel Securities Authority. Again, it depends on the end use and what the service that you intend to provide is.
Okay, thanks for that clarification. Okay, perfect. And just 1 minute on payments. Recently, when I was there, you mentioned that a new law has passed, which will allow PSD2, PSD3 players to also sort of passport or migrate or use their license in some manner or form in Israel to offer to the Israeli market. Maybe you can just give a 1 minute background on that. We'll sidetrack for a minute, but it's quite exciting news.
It's a bit of a sidetrack, even though it's not unrelated.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's all part of
the world of payments,
a technological earthquake that we're living through, right?
Yes.
I mean, which is shaking the foundations of regulatory regimes everywhere. So yes, payment system is undergoing a dramatic development, hopefully to the benefit of all of us. There is absolutely no reason in the world why, if I have a client, I'm in Israel, I'm a lawyer in Israel, and I have a client in the UK, it takes me 2 weeks to receive payment. It's a joke. And I think that technology is going to allow for that. So just like the European regime, we have a similar one, which literally follows the European standards. And what the law does was allow a sort of fast track for licensed entities outside of Israel, governed primarily in Europe, EU countries, to be able to apply for a license here, and it will go very fast. I can tell you that that's not a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
Regulators don't like to decide, and if some other regulator decided for them, then that's great. But I think, more seriously, we're a small market, and if big international players with the higher standards and best practices of doing things can come here, this will cause the entire market to elevate to that level. And that's, I think, a huge interest for Israeli consumers. And one of the main reasons that the regulators want to bring those foreign players here, which is a big thing.
For sure. No. So announcement, if there's any PSD2, PSD3 regulated players out there who want to expand to a new market, Israel is definitely a market which is opening and might
and,
be.
And I think, by the way, we should be an interesting market. Israelis are fairly early adapters, quick. We like technology. We feel comfortable with technology. There's definitely a market here. So if the regulatory path is not a burden, too much of a burden, or definitely not a barrier, it's a hurdle that needs to be overcome and not too complicated, then I think it's definitely something that should be considered.
Agreed. So I'd like to now turn our focus for a few minutes to banking and taxes, specifically in the crypto scene. So of course, banking banking for crypto specifically is a problem all over the world. But I believe it's especially a problem in Israel. Currently, there are only two main banks in Israel, which are the Bank of Lumi and the Bank of Hapoalim. Excuse if I didn't say that word correctly. And also, from my understanding, Israelis can only pay their taxes from Israeli banks, and the banks till now won't really accept cash converted from cryptocurrencies, which of course creates a bit of a problem for Israelis trading and investing in cryptocurrencies. Furthermore, the few licensed operators also do find it a bit difficult to open up accounts. However, a few years ago, there was a win for the industry when the Supreme Court of Israel ruled in favor of Bits of Gold exchange in a court case between Bits of Gold and Bank of Lumi. What happened here was that the bank removed access to the exchange's bank account, citing regulatory concern. However, the court ruled in favor of Bits of Gold and said that the bank will have to allow the exchange access to their services, which of course impacted some other providers and persons on the ground. Can you please comment on these points relating to the difficulties of banking and also paying taxes, and also perhaps give some insight on if things have changed or evolved since this court ruling, which I believe was a few years ago now, which ruled in favor of giving access to licensed crypto companies?
Right. So I think that, yes, I mean, banks in Israel are not easy when it comes to money, where the source of which was crypto. None of the banks accept crypto, right? You always have to convert it first. In Israel, we have five major banks. Hapoalim and Leumi are the two largest.
Okay.
But I can't say this. 2015, 16, 17 were years where people started making money from crypto and wanted to convert it and bring it in and deposit it in banks. And the banks pushed back because they didn't even begin to know how to address this. They have their anti-money laundering obligations, and part of it is managing the risk, and they didn't know how to do it. So they just simply said, sorry, they simply said no.
Okay.
And there were lawsuits, and in all of those lawsuits, the courts told the banks, we understand that life is complicated. You can't say no, right?
After going through 5 years to obtain a license, I mean, they'll have no choice, I guess.
Right. No, I'm saying you can't refuse to provide banking services and just say, this is too dangerous for me.
Yes.
You need to be more concrete. Mm-hmm. You need to try. You do things to mitigate. You can't just say no. And in 2019, that was the Supreme Court ruling in the Bits of Gold case, which really was seminal. It was an important landmark. But since then, a number of things happened. A, the bank supervisor stepped in, and the bank supervisor first issued an instruction, a mandatory instruction, first in draft form, seeking comments, and then finalized it. And basically now banks are not permitted to just say no. They have to implement a procedure. They have to manage the risks. They can't, right, neutralize them. They have to manage the risk. That's one thing. And following that instruction, several of the banks, there aren't many, right? There are five, but I think three or four of them, I think three. No, actually, they're five major banks. They're now two incumbents, but I think four of the major banks have procedures in place. So at least formally, they allow you to do this. Now, you touched upon taxes, which is an important point. People make money. They come to the tax authority. They say, I want to report. I want to pay tax. The bank refuses to accept the money. And I can tell you now that, again, depending on size, on the size of the account, but now, again, as I said, for definitely some of the banks, they have a clear process in place. So when you want to do this, they'll say, no problem. We need, you know, this document and this document and this document and this type of approval and this type of approval. And typically there's also a technological component there where with a report that you generate from certain types of service providers. And when you provide all of that paperwork, the bank will accept. I can also say that the bank supervisor instructed the banks to go easy in terms of risk management when the money comes from one of the Israeli licensed service providers.
Yes.
So if you go through Bits of Gold or you go through B2C or you go through Horizon or any of the other licensed entities, then the banks are easier because they already have a license, these entities. They have their AML, KYC, independent obligations, and the bank is allowed to take a step back and say, I get it, right? I'm not the only one. I'm not the first and last line of defense. There's another line of defense here. So things are moving along. There was also talk about payment to the Israel Tax Authority directly in crypto that still wasn't
I was going to say on your previous point, I believe that if you have an account with Bits of Gold, you can ask Bits of Gold to pay your taxes directly. So at least if you manage to get
but
an account,
they'll
convert. Yes.
Yeah, but slowly we're developing.
Yes.
And it's important to say, and this comes hand in hand with technological tools, okay? Without advertising anyone, but, you know, I could mention Chainalysis, and there are other companies that provide similar, slightly different services. And the major, definitely the banks and the major financial institutions in Israel receive these services. Sometimes it's SaaS, so it's easy. So they can run these checks automatically and gain a level of comfort that, if you ask me, is much higher than taking on a bank wire from a different bank, right? Because even there, so you ask what it's from, and you're shown a contract that tells you what's the source of money. Here, you have technology literally telling you whether or not these tokens were in a wallet that you don't want to deal with, or they were all through clean wallets. So technology is also helping risk management in these aspects and enabling the banks to be more accommodating, which is a good thing, again, for the industry.
Perfect. Yes, I agree. And it sounds like there's definitely been an improvement, and there are some solutions on the ground, especially if you're operating or working with licensed providers. Now, just sticking on the topic of tax for a moment longer, recently, a bill exempting foreign residents from capital gains taxes on crypto sales and lowering tax on stock options like crypto options for employees has passed a preliminary reading in the Knesset, which is the Israeli parliament. Can you please explain how cryptocurrencies in general are currently treated for tax purposes in Israel, and also share your thoughts on the current crypto-related tax bill?
Right. So as I said, they're regarded as assets, and taxation is capital gain tax. The specific amendment that you mentioned is just another component of what the Israeli government instructed the regulators to do, which is basically take your laws, take your rules, and do and implement the necessary adaptation so that crypto can be included in the financial ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
We have a law in place exempting foreign investors when they sell Israeli shares so that they don't need to pay capital gain tax in Israel. So that the only taxation regime that they need to take into account is the one where they're the country that they're residents of. And recognizing that the crypto industry, in many cases, it's not only seeking investments through shares, but also through tokens. You want to equalize. You don't want for foreign investors to have to say, "Wait a minute, I'm going to take shares just because here I have an exemption, and for tokens I don't."
Mm-hmm.
So basically, and it's the same for stock options and employees. Basically, employees as incentive sometimes receive tokens. And there's a program that they have that basically views them as capital gains as opposed to income, so that they're taxed at a lower threshold and a lower tax rate. And the idea here is to allow these companies to grant tokens both to investors and employees without tax considerations being a factor.
Okay, perfect. And that's definitely obviously very, very positive. And I believe this is a bill, but it's passed. And what's the next step in terms of becoming law? How does it work?
Mm-hmm. So it passes an initial reading or vote. And then it goes to the relevant committee at the Israeli Parliament. Here, typically the Finance Committee, where they hone in into the details, make the relevant tweaks. This is not a big amendment. This specific bill.
Yeah.
So I don't imagine there to be too much of a discussion. And it's a good. I mean, I don't see many people objecting there. It goes through that. It's approved by the committee, and then it goes back to Parliament for a second and third reading. And once it's voted second and third, then it becomes an obligating law.
Okay, perfect. Thanks for that explanation. So moving towards the end of the episode, I'd just like to pose a sort of political, I guess, and controversial maybe, question. So I'm going to read out some extracts from the BBC as reported last month. So since the start of the year, huge weekly protests have been held by the people opposed to the government's reform plans. The scale of the protests has escalated, with hundreds of thousands of people packing the streets across the country. However, undeterred, the government passed into law the first plan change, a so-called reasonableness bill, removing the Supreme Court's power to cancel government decision it deems unreasonable. As a quick background for those of you who perhaps haven't been following the news, the proposed override clause is meant to allow the Knesset, with a majority of 61 members who are subjected to the coalition agreement, to pass any law regardless of its content of how harmful, extreme it may be, without the criticism or inspection by the court. Now, one of the leading venture capital funds in Israel, TLV Partners, has raised some concerns and has stated, if Israel's democracy is harmed, the high-tech industry will wither or flee abroad. The best minds will leave. Israeli entrepreneurs will establish companies outside of the country's borders. The country's credit rating will be affected. And S&P have already announced that the legal reform could lower Israel's credit rating and so on. So my question to you, Zvi, is how do you expect that these reforms will affect our industry, if at all?
So it's a big and loaded question.
Yes.
Israel, yes. And it's unrelated to crypto. Israel is undergoing, there's a very loud and very evident public debate,
yes,
on the right relationship between the various branches of government. The government is pushing for reform. There are demonstrations because there are many people that feel that the government is pushing too hard and going too far. And I don't know where this will, yes, end, but I can only, I do believe, but this is my personal view, which is,
yes, opinion,
not better than any other person, is that we're a relatively young nation, and this is a debate that probably needs to occur. I would have liked it more to occur in a more orderly and organized and tolerant atmosphere, but I guess the fact that we do things loud and fast, and you know, it's probably the way Israelis will have a public debate. So it's a real public debate, and at, yes, the end of it, I personally don't think, I hope that it won't be, that democracy won't be harmed, and that the division and distinction between the three branches of government is not harmed. Obviously, if it is, many things will be impacted. Definitely, the startup ecosystem that we talked about, yes, in the beginning of the,
yes, and investment
of the interview, of this podcast, I'm hopeful.
Yes,
and I want to believe that everyone in government understands why it is so important to continue fostering this ecosystem, continuing to enable it. And again, yes, it's a loud and intense public debate, and I'm hoping that we come out of it a stronger democracy.
Perfect. No, I appreciate your feedback on a very, very difficult question, and time will tell, you know, if it will have impact, if it will come out a stronger nation, if it will be forgotten, etc. Now, finally, Zvi, I'd just like to end on a quick question on what your projections are for the future of crypto in Israel, and what you are most excited for in terms of how things will evolve. Mm-hmm.
Look, I'm excited that government stepped in, mm-hmm, and there's a formal decision and guidance to the regulators to put together legislation and bring it to parliament, because these types of things, without political pressure from above, financial regulators won't move forward. It's almost against their interest, right? Because it's adding to their list of responsibilities. It's new technologies. It's very difficult. So I'm excited about that. And I can see that it's happening. And I think that if in the end of the road, we have a regulatory regime that is legislated, that is a market builder, a market enabler, I think it will do huge things for the local industry. I think that the Israeli financial industry is ready and thirsty for new things, for new technologies, for getting better. And I think that we certainly have that potential. So, you know, that's what I'm looking forward to.
Yes. And that's a good thing to look forward to. You know, regulation will definitely bring about certainty and will definitely enhance the market. So good times ahead. Well, Zvi, thanks very much for joining the conversation. It has been an absolute pleasure discussing these topics with you. And before I let you go, I would just like to invite you to participate in a quick round of I Call Bullshit. So I'll read out the following phrase and just tell me if it is bullshit or not, or true or false.
Okay, let me see if I can do it.
So according to an article dated April 22nd, 2003, published by Al Monitor, cryptocurrency exchange Gemini's data has indicated that 28% of people in Israel own cryptocurrency.
I would say false. It seems too much.
I actually would have thought false as well, but this is true. And this was published, I mean, on the media. So, I mean, always with an element of a pinch of salt. However, apparently over one fourth of the population in Israel does own cryptocurrency. So despite the issues with the banking and the taxes, etc., it seems to be quite an alive
it's unbelievable. I mean, I my guess would have been close, but it just seemed a very high number. So very interesting. But you should know that this just supports everything that I said. I mean, it just shows that Israelis are adapter. I mean, I think this is a very interesting statistic. I think that definitely Israelis, but people around the world are looking for alternatives. They want to diversify. There's distrust, there's trust from other things. And I think that in order for that to happen in a safe manner, you have to have regulation. And that's what's happening everywhere in the world. By the way, I think the United States is lacking behind.
Definitely.
But Europe, also in Israel, also in other places. And as I said, I think that's really what the industry needs. And I'm happy that it's happening.
No, I agree. It's all taking place in different places, what's all around the world. So Zvi, thanks again for joining. And to you, our listeners, thank you for listening. And until next time, take care.